Welcome to the latest episode of the Dan Time Podcast. I'm Dan McArdle, your host, and this is your ticket to the vast expanses of the Daniverse. Keep listening, and you're going to hear stories untold from various personalities from around the globe, including songwriters, musicians, that you're going to want to add to your playlists, and wanting to see them perform live will be added to your bucket lists. My guest today is Chilean-Belgian rock sensation Danny Hart. Danny's a powerhouse vocalist, songwriter, and vocal performance coach lighting up the heavy rock and hard rock scene. Her latest EP, Slaying Bluebeard, is a fierce and unapologetic exploration of empowerment and resilience. Featuring legendary bassist Billy Sheehan on the standout track No More, which earned Classic Rock Magazine's Best New Rock Song of the Week. The record cements Danny's position as a rising force in rock. Adding to her accomplishments, Danny performed at Grass Pop 2024, one of Europe's most iconic metal and rock festivals. In addition to her TV debut on Belgium's The Voice, Van Vlaanderen, her journey is nothing short of a rock and roll fairy tale. Now, some of you know that I grew up listening to hard rock and heavy metal, and this music is very important to me. It's part of who I am. I've been going to these concerts for over 20 years. I know how this music speaks to people and creates a sense of belonging. And I love hearing about artists in this genre who are bold, daring, and ready to take on the world. Danny Hart checks every one of those boxes. If you're a fan of Hailstorm, The Pretty Reckless, Kiss, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Danny Hart is your next musical adventure. KNAC.com raved about Slaying Bluebeard and Danny's potential, and Van Milam from Snooze Control wrote, "After I'm Gone has been part of my personal playlist since its release. Gives me goosebumps." And about the single No More, "I enjoyed it during Grass Pop and still feel the onstage vibe." On this EP, Danny is joined by Zahn Hiratz on lead guitar, Anton Meerhartz on second guitar, also serves as creative producer for the record, Vincent DeLotte on bass, and Vincent Verstreppen on drums. I so enjoyed this conversation with Danny. I hope you will also. You can connect with her on social media at Danny Hart Music. All right, let's check out a preview of the single No More. This song and the Slaying Bluebeard EP available, again, wherever you download music. Turn it up, or if you must, turn it down a notch, because it's about to get loud. This one's on fire. Here we go. Part one of our Danversation. It is Danny Hart time. KNAC.com has referred to her as Hard Rock's own firebrand, Danny Hart. Danny, thanks for being a part of the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dan, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing fantastic.
Nice, nice, nice. Thank you so much for having me here tonight.
Thanks for making time. We are on different time zones, Danny in Belgium and me, of course, here on the northern Gulf Coast of Florida. Speaking of
the sunny, where the sun shines bright.
Yes.
Not here, unfortunately.
We have some very bizarre weather here. We had 6-7 inches of snow.
Most
snowfall in a century last week.
Wow.
And now
we're
back to pretty much short sleeves.
Okay, that's pretty red.
Yes.
The difference.
I think so.
Yeah. No, here it's just gray and cold and rainy and ugly.
Well, yeah. Do you get used to that type of cold, gloomy in some cases weather? Does it just depend on the type of person you are to
Yeah.
Power through?
Well, well, you know, before I moved to Europe, that's already about more than 10 years ago, when I went to study in London, one of the first questions that they asked me when they were issuing my visa is like, do you like rainy weather? And by then, in Chile, we at least back then, we still had a very balanced four seasonal weather. So winter was winter and summer was summer. And, you know, so rain belonged to winter and a little bit of spring and a little bit of autumn. But I loved it. I really used to love just jumping on the rain spots, you know, and like a kind of singing in the rain sort of a feel. So I was like very innocently telling these people from the home office, from the embassy, like, oh my God, yes, I love it. And, you know, that was true until I moved to Belgium and I never saw the sun again. No, I do see it. But it's a lot more scarce than yeah. what I was originally born with. And I must say I appreciate the greenery scenes that the Belgian landscape has to offer.
Sure.
Thanks to the rain. I do not appreciate the gray, cold, windy, ugly weather anymore. Basically.
So you grew up in Chile. How old were you when you moved to, was it London at first?
Yes. So I think I was about 23 years old, 22, 23 years old, right after finishing my career as sound technician.
Well, I know that usually I do this interview, as you can call it, or it's more of a conversation, a Danversation, as we were talking earlier.
A Danversation, I love it. okay, two Dans talking about random stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Digging it.
But what I do is it's a little bit inverted. So here I go talking about the weather and talking about where you were growing up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting away from my system here. So thanks for not.
ADHD, brother.
Yes. But talking about riding down the highway, jamming to music, and the guests that I've had on the show, I listen to all of the music from all of the guests. And there's a reason that I invited them to be on the show. Danny, I've been checking out, and hours from the release of this episode, actually where you are, I guess it's just a few hours away,
mm-hmm.
The release of your second EP, Slaying mm-hmm. Bluebird.
Yeah.
Slaying Bluebeard, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't blame you, because I have same confusion all over.
Bluebird?
All the time. Even we almost named the master files as Slaying Bluebird instead of
really?
Beard. So we had to change. I'm very glad that I spotted that on time, because otherwise I would have had to change the narrative of what it was in about. Yeah.
But I have been rocking to No More and After I'm Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Repeat on both songs.
Nice.
And this grabbed the attention of KNAC.com when I was doing some research on you, I think earlier in the week. It's still featured prominently on their website, the famous KNAC.
Yeah, right. My God, that's amazing.
Terry Martinson, KNAC.com, he said, this is speaking of, this might be After I'm Gone, if you're a fan of early Y&T or Dawkins' The Hunter record.
Yeah, 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 my God.
You're in for a treat.
I couldn't believe when he mentioned Dokken. I mean, especially our guitarist, San Hierarts, he's like a hardcore fan of Dokken. Also our producer, Anton Merhardt. I mean, me too, but those guys are crazy about Dokken. So when I read that, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. Like, this is amazing.
He also goes on to say, we as a rock community need this record and need Danny to keep making music.
Wow. That's so kind.
Feeling that I got as well, especially with No More. That was the first one that the opening note to No More, that's the introduction to Danny Hart.
Completely
blown away. It kind of, for me, Hark, I'm a big Kiss fan. It reminded me a little bit of Shout It Out Loud. When that gets going, I don't play drums actively, but I love songs that open with that da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, kind of the guitar and drums in unison and featuring the legendary Billy Sheehan, of course, of Mr. Big fame, David Lee Roth, the Winery Dogs, Steve Vai, and basically regarded as probably one of the top rock bass players on the planet. So,
I would even say the ultimate guitar bass god, you know, of the world. Yeah, totally.
I used to watch him. This is way back. I can't believe how much time has passed, but there was a show on VH1, if people even remember
VH1. What a channel. I loved VH1 so much. Oh, my God. Why did they stop?
He was like a regular on Eddie Trunk's show, that metal show.
Oh, my God. I love that show. I watched it in Chile all the time. Yeah. My God.
Tell me a little bit about how this song came together, the EP as a whole. Of course, I want to get into the video for After I'm Gone. That's just a whole, that takes you back to the way videos were made maybe 30 years ago. I love how the band all of a sudden comes in after that drum part about 3.5 minutes in. Kind of memorable.
It's a little surprise.
How did these songs come together? And once we get into discussion here, I want to call out the other guys who play on
Yes, please.
Songs with you.
Yeah, they're amazing. I love them all.
So on guitar.
So his name is San Hierarts. That's how you pronounce it in Dutch, Flemish, let's say. It's not the easiest pronunciation, but we just call him Zan.
San Hierarts.
Yeah.
And Anton.
And his band is his own music, his own band. It's called Sin Savage. So he's our savage, wild man of the band, where all the ladies should watch out.
Is he the guy that in the video you can see wearing the Metallica Kill 'Em All?
I think so. Crazy guitar player, short hair. That's him. Yeah.
I've got Anton.
Anton Merhaerts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Anton. I'm going to tell him Anton from now on.
Anton, okay.
But so he was our second guitarist. He also did a lot of solos, and he acted as the creative producer. So he oversaw all the sound of the 80s. He has this incredible ear and love for the 80s, incredible vintage material as well. So we went, especially him and our sound engineer, Bob Brisnik, they went quite nerd on the analog 80s lane to get that wonderful sound that you can appreciate, I'm sure. Yes. Like all of us 80s lovers are tripping when we hear that vibe. So,
also plays in, is it Velvet Mist and Cardinal?
Yes, so Cardinal is his own project and Velvet Mist as well, together with guitarist Jonathan Verstrepen, he's from Carnation, and the drummer, Vincent Verstrepen, that's his brother. So they play together in their own band called Carnation, and Vincent, he recorded drums for DEP as well. Very good friend of mine as well.
And I've got Vincent plays, when you go out live, and on the video, he's playing those same parts.
Yes. So Vincent Delatte, I hope I'm pronouncing it good.
That's why I only said the first names.
I understand. no worries. So our dear Vincent, I call him my compadre. So he is from the band called Scavenger. It's like a trash thrash metal band here in Belgium. He has played quite a few projects already. He's a very seasoned musician, incredible bass player. And he firstly and originally jumped in for being the recording bass at the studio. And then he joined us for a couple of gigs here locally and at Graspop, the like one of the biggest rock and metal festivals here in Belgium. But now he has decided to focus more on local projects, and we're kind of getting very busy, starting to look abroad as well, which unfortunately he cannot join us for that part. We're all very sad about it, but we're all very good friends, and I mean, we knew that from the beginning. That was also the reason why he joined, more for studio work than for live. And even though he joined us and actually kind of saved our asses for the live gigs, we are now in the looks for our new next bass player. But we have a couple of options already. We know a lot of musicians, so I'm sure that's going to go very smoothly as well.
Well, as I'm talking about the latest EP, Slaying Bluebeard, this is available.
Good one.
Wherever you download music, on all platforms, as we're talking. How much time in the studio and the other tracks I haven't heard, Running, and it closes with Millennial Tribe. Did these?
I should send them over.
Did these come together as far as the writing process around the same time?
Yeah, well, I would say it's been a long process, actually, a very long process. I believe even Millennial Tribe is a song that I wrote when I was still at uni with my previous band formation from there. And I had the song and we just put it together in a rehearsal. And I think it must have been 2016, something like that. So it was quite early on, that one. Running, I wrote it when I was in the last year of uni. That was 2017. No More, I think about the same time I started it. But then I actually finished it, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And After I'm Gone was a song that I wrote in the middle of the pandemic, during a burnout, when we were all in lockdown. And I was losing my shit.
Yeah.
Basically.
It has that feel to it.
Good, because yes. It has that. Yeah, actually the video is a bit like representing artistically that struggle internally, and like that literally like losing my shit on stage was a visual representation of that burnout back then.
Yeah. I think that the pandemic, I've talked about it on several episodes with people, that it's like, whether, you know, we're so fast paced. We have so many things clamoring for our attention and so many tasks that we've got to complete and places we have to be. But the pandemic, whether you liked it or not, it slowed everything down. So all of a sudden you had to like kind of just sit in your agony.
Yeah. We had a lot of things stirring up, I think, and moved, triggered a lot. Internally, externally, I mean, the world changed after that, that's for sure. Yeah. So many people died as well, which is incredible to think about it. Still, we now live our lives, you know, as busy as normal, but actually, it's quite a huge worldwide event that happened back then and still happening. Huh? So we're living in a very... Yeah, moving times, I feel.
Yes, it's the pace is ramped up. And for some people, I think we all should look out for our friends and look out for people that
exactly.
We don't even know who are not really...
Just be kind, spread kindness, spread love.
Yeah, some people may still be grieving. You know, if they had a loss that they went through in 2021 100%. Unexpectedly, yeah. They're still dealing with that.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, there are people who died back then, but also people who died because of that pandemic later on.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's very true.
I think we all have our own little stories there in pandemic and our little processes. And hopefully it made us evolve a little bit as humans, or as personally and as a society. Not sure if we're there, but I still have hope.
I think you're either the type of person
choose
that...
to have hope, let's
yes.
Put it that way.
I always take hope over fear.
Exactly.
Even when fear seems like the easy way out or the easy answer.
Yeah, and fear is so overused, you know, since ages. So, yeah, I have my opinions there too, but I just pour it into my music instead.
I want to tell you something about No More, which this song was rapidly acclaimed in, I guess, the first week of release. It won Best New Rock Song of the Week by Classic Rock Magazine.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Just a barnstormer type song. I was telling you about my daughter before we got started here. And if she listens to this episode in 10 years or whatever, and she's into totally different music, please forgive me. But I just, my take, I really love this song. I love what you're, the energy that you're putting out there. And
thank you.
And it's like, I just, I don't know, I was driving around listening to it this afternoon, and I thought, I hope my daughter's that headstrong, where she's not taking any shit off anybody, you know, just like, what's that line?
That should be an aim for women, right?
Yes. What's the line in the middle of where he's still calling you doll, and he's like,
yeah, he would walk and say, honey, wouldn't you be a doll? Look so pretty when you act so tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
He finds out the hard way.
Yeah, well, you know, there is a lot of inspiration, especially in politics, not even nowadays, but back in 2016, with shit happening worldwide, you know, Brexit and other things on your side of the world.
Sure,
guess.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, I mean, do we, like, we're on the 21st century, do we really need to take that shit still? Like, aren't we evolved enough to, like, just respect everyone just because they're human beings, not because they're men or women or whatever in between? So, yeah, that's probably you picked it up as well already from No More, that it's about, like, yeah, boundaries and in many, 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 many layers.
Yeah. It's not one type of person or maybe one experience that you went through that inspired the song, right?
Not necessarily, but I've had dealt with very uncomfortable situations many, many times during my life since I was very young, and not necessarily because of my looks, but just because of being a woman and being alone. So, I mean, I could tell you stories since I was 12 years old. Like, that's how young we're talking about.
That type of character who thinks he can do whatever he wants, can speak to somebody however he wants, or treat somebody however he wants. And I just love this. Now is the time to...
Yeah, well, there's some things that they're a little bit more socio-political than, like, personal stories. But on the personal side, I grew up in Chile. And even though that Chile is kind of very Western-oriented in terms of mindset, and, like, my generation is quite aware and, like, woke, if you want to call it. But I've had many moments about sexual harassment, even being very young, being just taking a bus for my singing lessons, or, like, going to take a ticket for a concert and coming back and being harassed. So things where you would just be yourself and go out on the street with not necessarily trying to show off anything, but just, I don't know, with a short because it's summer and it's 40 degrees, you know? And having to have a very sort of defensive attitude because you know you're going to get screamed shit on the street. And not because you're looking for it. It's just, it is what it is, back then at least. And now it's actually, there is a law against that. So actually, if people do that on the street, they can go to jail or at least be accused of the police and have consequences about it. But if that wasn't the case when I was a teenager back then, and I was, sometimes it was just simply coming back from school on a 10-minute walk. So that's on that level, like street, like catcalling and things like that, or some other uncomfortable things on the personal level. But on the societal level as well, you know, like, I mean, if we talk about equality for equal pay for the same job, or like opportunities, or like job opportunities rising in the ladder, you know, politics, women being in a congress or like presidency and stuff like that, Yeah, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. And that song, particularly that song, was inspired by Brexit and by the elections in the US. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go too political because I know it's a sensitive subject, but as an artist, you observe things and you just create stuff. And as a woman as well, in my own skin and experience, like, I can totally relate to that, you know, like being belittled, I guess.
Just marginalized, belittled. Like your opinion doesn't matter.
Yeah, or like your experience doesn't matter, because sometimes it's like, well, if there is no proof, then it didn't happen. So these things, and also like opportunity-wise, or like and I don't know how it is in the States, but at least in South America, it's like a huge problem where, like, for many, especially from the older generation, if there was some sort of situation of abuse, mainly the first question would be like, but how was she dressed, you know? She was looking for it and things like that, which is ridiculous because, I mean, yeah, no, you could be naked on the street and nothing should happen, you know?
I've heard other men say that women shouldn't dress provocatively, and I think that totally misses, women are not,
well, if you
not
look
dressing.
At, if you look at, yeah.
And they're not dressing for you. Like, this is something,
exactly.
This is an extension of their mm-hmm. personality. Just like, you know, I like to wear, I'm wearing a Metallica
a
hat.
Cap.
I'm wearing
exactly.
This is
exactly.
What I like to wear. And it's not, you're not trying to draw attention or send a certain message. Just.
No. And I mean, look at other Middle East countries. I mean, they're completely covered and they're still repressed. So it has nothing to do with your looks. Or how you dress is about power.
Yeah.
It's about power.
But music-wise, I like some of this kind of harkens back to a different era. There's a point in the song where the guitar is kind of mimicking the vocal line, maybe towards the end. I love that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a little play. Well, you know, even though that there are a lot of layers to this song, it's still like a rather uplifting a rock and roll hymn in the sense of, like, kind of, we're not going to take it. And you can interpret it whatever you want. Because for me, like, the ultimate meaning is what the listener wants to give meaning to. Yeah. And I might have written it for some reasons, or like for a certain story, or be inspired, whatever. But ultimately, it's your own story mm-hmm. that counts, and how you see it and what it triggers within you. And I think a lot of people not necessarily look at this more deeper layer, but still feel like, well, I've been in situations where I have been belittled by a boss, by bullies, by any sort of situation, and that's where we're standing against. That's where the shit we're not taking anymore. And that's also very true, also a personal story there. I have been bullied very badly in high school, so I totally relate with that energy too. And honestly, I don't think, like, we rockers or metalheads, yeah, pretty much all of us have been in that position where we have been one way or another belittled at some point in our lives. So we are rebellious because of that as well. So I think that's the energy that matches, regardless of the other more feminist, if you want to call it, or political layer, you know?
Yeah, there's a oneness in this type of music that maybe people who don't listen to it, which I've never had any problem if it's too loud or mm-hmm. it's just aesthetically it's not pleasing for everybody's ears, but like a very strong community in this style of music.
Yes, when it's a family.
You go to a concert. I always tell people sometimes if you don't have a friend that wants to go, or they flaked out on you and it's like, oh my gosh, it's the night of the show. Go to a concert by yourself, because as soon as you walk into that concert hall, arena, wherever, but especially at some
100%.
Of the smaller venues, you're going to feel like you belong.
100%. Like, I've been to so many gigs on my own. Just for security now, I try to go not alone anymore. But I've been to many gigs since I was 16, just on my own and things like that. And I've met so many wonderful people because of that. Some friends that I still keep nowadays. In Chile, for instance, I met a good friend of mine called Eddie on an Iron Maiden gig, for instance. Then so many other people that I've met through music. I once was in Sweden in Upplands Väsby to go to a gig of one of my favorite bands, Heat. And I met so many people in the front row, just like, you know, friends that I still keep, wonderful people. And what it always strikes me that we all metalheads, you know, look so rocker and like, you know, like we're gonna like fuck you up and stuff like that. But actually, we're all teddy bears.
Yes.
So you will be more in danger in something like Tomorrowland than in Grasspop, for instance. You know, it's going to be a lot more aggressive, like a Bon Jovi concert full of girls rather than like a metal mosh pit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had some of the most fun and met the coolest personalities, and sometimes it's people you may never talk to again, but it makes
it's a beautiful community, I think. A lot of pain as well.
Yeah.
A lot of pain and difficult emotions, strong emotions, but that we get to sort of like heal and process through music, thanks to live music, thanks to recording music, thanks to music that can connect to those difficult emotions where we actually feel understood. So that has been, to me, the power of music, actually.
Have you noticed this, where talking about people growing up carrying a lot of pain, and you don't know what their individual background's like, but this has always been important to me with bands that I like that stay together, or maybe they have broken up and they get back together. That's a big deal for a lot of people that have maybe grown up in a very unstable upbringing, where they didn't see their dad after they were 3 or 4 years old, or they've always these fractured relationships all around them, but their favorite band always stays together. Like that was kind of cool to me.
I never thought about it, but now that you say it, it's actually really true. I mean, sometimes we just need a little bit of an anchor to our lives, and music can provide that in stable lineups. I never thought about it here, but you're totally right. Like it can be like the tiny spark of light that you need to just keep on going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was
wow.
So, and when you guys go out and play, I was looking at some of the material that you play, the covers, like Round and Round from Rat. If people go see Danny Hart, they might hear that. Or
we're all 80s fans.
But I just listened to a podcast episode with Stephen Piercy and Warren DeMartini from Rat, who they hadn't spoken in years and years, and they're doing something together. It's not under the full Rat banner, but they're taking it out on the road. So that was like, I just feel like as metal fans, we're always, it's heartwarming when some of these old personalities get back together, and or they never separate, like James and Lars with Metallica. Like I don't think anybody could ever imagine a breakup there.
Well, I was just about to mention Metallica, because actually the secret sauce right there was Therapy. I don't know if you saw the documentary, but like, I mean, they just could get through that whole crease and fights or whatever.
Yep.
Because they were being guided by someone who could actually help them heal both internally and as a band. Because when you're in a band, it's actually you have like a relationship with 3 or 4 other people, and like real relationships. So it's like 5 different worlds that need to match somehow and need to stand each other, and like in the goods and the bads. And it's hard work. I mean, you can love them, but it's still work, you know. And when I watched that documentary, I was like, oh my god, like I wish every single band in the world would watch this, because here's the secret. This is it. Therapy, self-growth, emotional intelligence and maturity, and you know, working on your own shit alone and together, and like any other relationship, basically.
Danny, what's it like? This is a random question I just insert sometimes into episodes. When you're on stage, and some of the, like if you're the drummer, you can't really see eyeballs maybe sometimes in the crowd, but you can get right up there in that front row or the second row. What are some of those interactions like when you're locking eyes with someone that's just really, they're just having a great night? This is this is what the doctor ordered. They're connecting with you and your music, and they're loving it, and maybe you're slapping hands. What's that like?
Oh, I've always said that like the biggest high that you can have when you're on stage is that connection, that human, pure, raw connection where you're just pure emotion and they are pure emotion and that emotion becomes one. You know, so it's just like I have no words to describe that feeling because you just need to live it to know what it is. It's something that you won't get unless I guess you have a very profound connection with someone, but it's also different because you're like with adrenaline, you are basically having a very strong workout during stage. You know, you're jumping, you're running, you're like one foot on earth, keeping everything in balance, being aware of what's going on with the band and the set list and your vocal technique or whatever interactions and with the band and the audience. But also you're super high and like I don't even do drugs or anything. I barely drink, but like I'm just flying high as a kite when I'm performing just because I'm so connected to what I feel within and I am expressing that externally as well. And when people match that energy and synchronizes, it's just like that's the reason why I turn back on stage, basically.
Was there a time in your life when you were maybe a teenager and you were just getting into music and you convinced your mom to buy that guitar for you? I think it was, if I clean my room, you could buy
13 years old.
yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, this is a real story. Yeah.
Was there a time like in those days, did you envision yourself on stage, or was it like I just need to be as close to music and music making as I can?
Yeah, so I probably should mention that I've suspected my whole life that I'm ADHD actually. So like attentional deficit with hyperactivity disorder, which you can see on stage. I still think nowadays I am not diagnosed officially, but I am on the road to be diagnosed because I mean the signs were all along. Let me tell you, even like school reports and stuff like that. But it means that I've also always been like very strongly connected to music. Like I think even my mom has like recordings of me being 1, 2 years old, just like playing the guitar randomly, like that, and just making melodies. And like the first time I hit the stage, I think I was 4 years old in kindergarten or something like that, and I was performing Colors in the Wind from Pocahontas in Spanish a cappella, because back then, oh my God, here I'm dropping my ID. Back then there were only cassettes available
Oh,
and
I
we
remember.
couldn't take the, yeah, exactly. Oh shit. And our and
Remember making mixtapes?
yeah, oh my God,
Yeah.
you remember? Well, I've sat hours and hours and hours next to the radio to make my own mixes. But anyway, so you couldn't take the voice out of cassettes, you know? So it was impossible back then to like be able to perform with the music only, at least for the cassettes that I had. So I just sang it a cappella and like I don't think there are recordings of that, but I just felt like I was, you know, at home or something, like just singing. Because yeah, I wanted to sing, that's it. And there's stories from my family. I don't remember that much, but they tell me like we were like at a school party from a cousin of mine, and then all of a sudden I disappeared, and then all of a sudden they hear on the speaker, oh well, we have a special guest today. She is the cousin of one of our students here, and she's going to perform a song for you from Shakira. Yeah.
Yes.
And there I was singing a cappella. I think I must have been like 6 years old, 7 years old. And then my family, what they tell me at least, because I don't remember, I'd remember being on stage and asking if I could play, but I don't remember the rest. And they tell me that they were all in tears because they couldn't believe like this little shit just went to on stage, you know, and there to like just sing. So it music has been connected like very strongly my whole life, and I think I also like when I was 7, I started to like I had a keyboard and I was just starting to songwrite like very random songs. I still remember it, but I will not sing it here because it was very pop stuff.
Danny, you mentioned Shakira. I've never asked anybody else this before, but do you think Shakira could be in a metal band, or she could have done that on the side? I think she could
I would love that. Well, she had a rocker pass. I don't know if you know her career in Spanish.
No.
But, oh my God, you should check out her stuff from Ojos Así, I think is the album called. Very, very cool stuff. Like early Shakira, she was more like a folk pop rocker, actually. It's later on that she evolved more like to the reggaeton sound, and yeah, she became a superstar. But actually, she actually started her career in Chile in Festival de Viña del Mar.
Oh, never knew that.
Yeah, it's a random fact that no one knows. But she, like, I think she was 13 or something like that, or very young. And yeah, so that's where she started. And yeah, I was I guess I still am a sort of fan of Shakira, and I'm so proud that another South America made it like this big. That gives us all of us Southies, you know, hope.
she performed at the Super Bowl like 3 or 4 years ago, and she smoked any like past show the previous few years, and I haven't seen anything that has topped that performance. She was on fire.
Yeah, and she can play guitar, you know, like she really, I'm pretty sure she's a rocker at heart, and she's such a smart, talented businesswoman as well. I have deep admiration for many artists, one of them Shakira, many from different styles, but yeah. So I lost the train of thoughts there.
Oh yeah, I got you off track. So you're 4 years old, and
But when I actually started going into rock and metal, I was around 12, 13 or something like that. And by 13 years old, we went to like this music store in Chile. I don't remember what it was, but it was in the neighborhood called Providencia. And I saw this guitar, this Washburn, like kind of leopardish looking, like with some red, and I can still see it. I still have the guitar. It's in Chile though, but like, you know, red on the side and going a little bit more yellow, and I was just in love. I had no idea about brands. I knew nothing more than I love it and I want it right now. So there we are, and I'm just like, you know, like completely in love with the guitar, like blinking my eyes and like looking at my mommy and blinking back to the guitar and looking at my mommy. And so we made a commitment there, and she says, like, well, because I mean, again, context ADHD, so very creative but very disorganized as well, and like a creative mess, let's say. Literally a mess on my room back then, at least. Still, I guess.
A beautiful mess.
A beautiful mess, yeah. No, it's just mess back then. So she says, like, okay. And by the way, she's like completely the opposite. So she's like super OCD for cleaning and tidiness. And so it's a very, very clashing energy right there. So we made the commitment that, like, if she would get me that one, I will start cleaning up my room more and tidying up. And I tried to keep up my end of the deal there. But at the time, I was too young and stupid to really fulfill that promise. I've tried to take the best habits of my mom without being OCD. Sometimes it works. Sometimes I have, like, a rush where I can clean up in everything in, like, 1 hour, and sometimes I just live through the mess until that energy kicks in and I clean up everything and tidy like a hotel, basically.
I can relate. So I can make a large mess very quickly, very quickly.
Exactly, just right? I think we're talking now in ADHD language. Let me tell you, not just Dan universe, yeah. Just also ADHD.
So you could probably relate where you make this mess in a matter of minutes, but then you got to run. Yeah. You got someplace you got to go, and then you're going to be busy through half the day the next day. So you keep looking. You're like walking to the house for 5 minutes. You look at it. You know it's there. And you think, okay, maybe in Saturday I'll get to that.
Yep.
And then
You have no idea how many people have been driven mad by that.
But if given the time, if I do have half a day, wow, I can make a room look spectacular.
Exactly.
I'll repair it, reform it.
Five-star hotel, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. How? No, we've found a balance by now, but it was a long exploration journey.
Stay tuned for the second part of our conversation. Thanks for listening to the Dan Time Podcast.